To connect local teachers with their students during this time of sheltering in place, we bring you this program of stories, music, and poems.
Hello again, listeners. I can't wait to find out what happens next in The World According to Humphrey by Betty G. Burney. Humphrey, the hamster in Room 26, accomplished a lot in our last chapter. He had a marvelous time over the weekend at the Nazarese and helped Shy Saya to raise her hand and even speak in class. Now he is a little freaked out by this whole Halloween thing and its spooky decorations. And he wonders why Garth has been misbehaving in class and acting angrily towards him. Well, let's continue with the story. Chapter 8, Tricks and Treats. Halloween or Halloween or Halloween? I wasn't sure what it was, but I was pretty sure I didn't like it. Especially on Monday night after Mrs. Brisbane turned out the lights. That's when those skeletons on the wall took on an eerie glow. The bats hanging from the ceiling began to whirl and twirl, and the smile on that ghastly orange pumpkin face looked more like a wicked smirk. Weird, weird, weird. So I was thrilled when Aldo flicked on the lights.
"Whoa! It looks like Halloween in here," he exclaimed as he wheeled in its cleaning cart.
He strolled over to my cage as usual and bent down so we were face to face.
"So, are you going to wear a costume for Halloween? It's Wednesday, you know. Halloween is when the ghosts and goblins come out to play," he explained.
"Eek!"
I squeaked.
"No, no, it's not scary. It's just fun. All the kids will wear costumes. Richie's going to be a werewolf. So what are you going to wear? A fur coat?"
He laughed at his own joke, then began his cleaning routine, talking to me as he swept and dusted. I started thinking about this costume thing. Miss Mac had a costume party once while I was staying with her. People dressed up like kings and pirates and ghosts, and Miss Mac dressed up like a clown with a sparkly pink wig and a funny face. Nobody wore a fur coat. I thought about this costume thing all night and the next day. When Garth threw a piece of wadded-up paper in my cage, I wondered about the costumes. When AJ tripped on his way up to the chalkboard and Gale didn't giggle, I wondered about the costumes. Even when Mrs. Brisbane called on Saya and she answered her, I wondered about the costumes. And I came up with a plan of my own. On Wednesday, Halloween arrived. But there were no costumes. I was extremely disappointed until Heidi blurted out,
"Mrs. Brisbane, when are we going to have the party?"
"Raise your hand, Heidi," the teacher told her. Heidi obediently raised her hand, and Mrs. Brisbane called on her. This time, when Heidi asked her question, Mrs. Brisbane said, "We will have our lessons this morning. After lunch, you may put on your costumes, and we'll start the party." I felt happy, 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 and got in a nice nap for the rest of the morning. But I was wide awake after lunch. My classmates returned from the cafeteria, then scurried off to the cloakroom and the bathrooms and returned. But I hardly recognized them in their costumes. Oh, they were wonderful! A dragon, two pirates, a princess, a ninja, two clowns, a ballerina, a bunny, a cat. Thank goodness not a real one. A baseball player, a mad scientist, a skeleton, the Statue of Liberty, an angel, and a devil. The room mothers came to help with the party. They were both dressed as witches. Still, Mrs. Brisbane was the scariest of them all. She didn't wear a costume, just a button that had the words, "This is my costume," printed on it. She gathered everyone in a circle, pushing all the tables back. Then she announced that the class would be having some treats. But in order to get them, they each had to do a trick, tell a joke, sing a song, or perform a trick for the rest of the class. Oh, I wish someone had told me. I had figured out the costume part, but what about this tricking for treats? Art the ninja stood on his head. He stood on his head so long, Mrs. Brisbane finally had to thank him and tell him it was someone else's turn. Gale, the ballerina, twirled around the room on her toes. Garth, baseball player, told a joke about a witch. Miranda, bunny, sang a funny song about your ears hanging low. It was all very entertaining, except for the fact that I was thinking about something else. But Mrs. Brisbane got my full attention when she called on Saya. Saya was dressed as the Statue of Liberty. She wore a flowing dress and had a crown on her head and a big cardboard torch in one hand. She stared down at the floor as she took her place in the center of the circle.
"And what trick will you do for us, Saya?" the teacher asked.
Saya still stared at the floor.
"Sing your song, Saya, sing!"
I squeaked out as loudly as I could.
"You can do it, Saya, sing!"
Yes, I know all she could hear was squeak, 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 but I did my best.
"I think Humphrey wants to hear from you," said Mrs. Brisbane, in a surprisingly friendly voice.
Suddenly, without warning, Saya began to sing the Star Spangled Banner in her clear, sweet voice. Everyone stood up right away, like you're supposed to when they sing the national anthem. Mrs. Brisbane put her hand over her heart, and the other kids did too. Well, pay attention Art didn't until his mom came over and whispered in his ear. I stood up too, as proud as a hamster could possibly be. When it was over, no one clapped or said a word. It seemed as if those sweet notes were still drifting around the room.
"That was lovely, Saya. Thank you for sharing your beautiful voice with us," Mrs. Brisbane said.
"I wish she'd speak that way to me someday. Nice, encouraging, friendly." Anyway, the tricks continued, and after AJ told a few riddles, Mrs. Brisbane looked around the circle and said, "Did I miss anyone?" This was the moment I'd been waiting for. No one had noticed, but the night before, I had sneaked one of Aldo's white dusting cloths into my sleeping hut. I had to act quickly. I pulled out the cloth and crawled under so it completely covered me. Then I stood up and began to shout like I'd never shouted before.
"Trick or squeak!" I cried. "Trick or squeak!"
Miranda noticed first.
"Look!" she yelled. "It's Humphrey!"
I wish I could have seen the faces of my classmates, but it was dark, dark, dark under the cloth. I could hear them, though. First there were gasps, then giggles, then shouts of,
"Look!" and "Humphrey's a ghost!"
I continued to squeak my heart out until I heard Mrs. Brisbane's firm footsteps coming toward my cage.
"Who did this?" she asked. "Who put that on Humphrey?"
No one answered, of course, not even me.
He could suffocate under that," she said.
"But he looks so cute,"
Heidi called out. Mrs. Brisbane didn't answer. She just said,
"Will someone please uncover him?"
Golden Miranda opened the cage door and whisked the cloth away.
"Humphrey, you are a riot," she said.
"Only a riot? Let's be honest here. I was a smash hit." Then the room mothers served up cupcakes with orange icing and cups of apple juice, and my classmates played games. Just before the bell rang, Mrs. Brisbane clapped her hands and made an announcement. "Mrs. Hopper and Mrs. Patel and I have consulted with one another. We have decided to give the prize for best trick to Saya Nazaree." Everyone clapped and cheered as Mrs. Brisbane handed Saya a blue ribbon. Saya looked over at me and smiled, a beautiful smile. Mrs. Brisbane continued, "And we have decided to award the prize for best costume to
Humphrey!"
She walked over to my cage and taped a big blue ribbon to it while my classmates cheered for me.
"Thank you,"
I squeaked, but I'm not sure anyone could hear me over all the noise.
"Thank you all."
The bell rang and the room was soon empty, except for Mrs. Brisbane. As she gathered up her papers to take home, Mr. Morales came in. He was dressed in a cap and gown, like people wear when they are graduating.
"Happy Halloween, Sue. Did you have a good party?" he asked.
"Very," she answered. "Somehow your friend over there got hold of a ghost costume and won the prize."
"Ha ha, see? I told you he'd add a lot to your classroom," he said with a smile.
"He has livened things up," said Mrs. Brisbane.
"Joy, joy, joy. I believed she was starting to like me."
"Just so he doesn't liven things up too much," she added. Poof. My hopes of winning over Mrs. Brisbane's heart crashed to the ground. Mr. Morales said his kids kept asking about me, and then he quickly left. Mrs. Brisbane headed out the door after him. There I was, all alone in room 26 with a bunch of half-torn bats and tattered skeletons hanging around me. As I waited for Aldo to arrive, I sat in a darkening room and pondered my job as a classroom pet. Had I really accomplished anything? Mr. Morales' children seemed to settle down when I was there. Saya's mother began to learn English, and Saya would probably never have sung in front of the class without my encouragement. Still, Mrs. Brisbane was not won over.
Neither was Garth Tugwell, although it seemed as if he had liked me well enough in the beginning. Now he always muttered things at me as he passed by my cage. I noticed that he was the only one in class who didn't cheer when I won the award for best costume. I was still worrying about Garth when the lights temporarily blinded me as Aldo sailed into the classroom yelling, "Trick or treat!" He was wearing his usual work shirt, dark pants, and heavy shoes, but on his face he wore huge glasses with a bulbous nose attached. The center of the glasses had giant eyeballs painted on with circles of red veins. His floppy mustache drooped out from under the nose.
"Great costume," I squeaked.
"Hey, what is this?"
Aldo rushed forward to examine my blue ribbon.
"Best costume? For a fur coat? I'll have to ask Richie about that," he said.
Aldo reached into his lunchbox and pulled out a juicy slice of apple.
"I've got a special Halloween treat for you, Humphrey, because I'm very, very happy tonight," he said.
I grabbed the apple and began nibbling as Aldo pulled his chair up close to my cage.
"You see, I went to the Moonlighters Club. You remember the club in that ad I found on the projector?"
I squeaked and excited, "Yes!"
"And I met a real nice girl there named Maria. She works all night at the bakery. So tomorrow we're going out on a date, lunch, and a movie."
Aldo leaned back in his chair.
"She's a real nice girl, pretty, nice. Did I tell you she works in a bakery?"
Aldo rose and paced back and forth in front of my cage.
"You know what I can't figure? I can't figure out how that ad got on that projector. Mrs. Brisbane wouldn't show that to the class, and she wouldn't be interested herself. And it was weird how the projector was left on. Mrs. Brisbane always leaves her room in ship-shape condition."
He paused to rub his chin, then looked at me out of the corner of his eye.
"You know, if you weren't locked up in a cage, I think you had something to do with it," he said. Then he laughed. "Well, whoever it was, I owe them a big thank you."
"You're welcome,"
I squeaked. Too bad Aldo didn't understand me this time. Tip 8. Hamsters are most active during the evening. Guide to the Care and Feeding of Hamsters, Dr. Harvey H. Hammer. Chapter 9. The Art of Self-Defense. Okay, I was having a great week, no doubt about it. Not only did I get the blue ribbon on Wednesday, but on Thursday, the class got a long letter from Miss Mack. She included a picture of her standing by a waterfall next to some very strange-looking creatures. They look like hairy pigs or raccoony dogs.
"These are coatis," Mrs. Brisbane said, reading from the letter.
The coatis looked weird. Miss Mack looked gorgeous, especially with all the red, yellow, and orange flowers surrounding her. How I wished I could be there with her, except maybe for the fact that those coatis might not be hamster-friendly. At the end of her letter, Miss Mack wrote,
"So farewell to all my wonderful friends in room 26, especially the small one with the big heart, Humphrey." Sigh, sigh, sigh.
Though the thought of Miss Mack made me happy, the weekend was coming up soon, and I always felt a little nervous about where I'd be spending it. When it was decided on Thursday that I was going home with Golden Miranda, I mean Miranda Golden, I was so excited. I only got an 83% on my vocabulary test. Say I got 100%. I know, because this time when Mrs. Brisbane asked who got 100%, she raised her hand. I always figured that Miranda lived in a castle, because she reminded me of a fairy tale princess in disguise. Wherever it was, it had to be wonderful if Miranda lived there. Well, Miranda's home wasn't exactly a castle, but it was very tall. Miranda lived in a fourth floor apartment with her mom and her big dog, Clem. We had to take an elevator to get there. The apartment was nice. The mom was nice. Clem was not nice. Let me explain. Miranda has a small bedroom, and her mom let me stay there, right on the desk. To welcome me, the two of them did a complete clean-out of my cage.
"I'll bet nobody's done this for a while," said Miranda's mom, and she was right. Pretty soon, I felt like a brand-new hamster.
Suddenly, Clem bounded into the room, a big mass of yellow fur poking his huge nose right up against my cage. His wet nostrils were like two eyes staring in at me, and he stuck out a giant tongue that came at me like a tidal wave. Luckily, the cage protected me.
Mom, Miranda yelled, please get Clem out of here.
Thank heavens, Mom took Clem out for a walk in the park while Miranda showed me her room. She held pictures of her friends and family up to the cage so I could see her dad, her stepmom, her grandparents in Florida. Next, she introduced me to her goldfish, Fanny. She wasn't much of a conversationalist. I squeaked,
nice to meet you, Fanny.
And she said, blub. I was thinking about how wonderful it would be to live with Miranda all the time when Clem returned from the park and galloped into the room.
Clem, stay out!
Miranda shouted, but Clem just wagged his tail and barked. Miranda closed the door so the dog had to stay outside, but we could still hear him whining and crying like a baby out in the hall. Still, just being with Miranda made everything seem golden until her mom called her to go shopping. Miranda protested. Good girl. But Mom didn't want her to stay inside on such a nice day. She had no choice, unless she was rude to her mom, which Miranda never would be.
I won't be gone long, Miranda told me, and I'll make sure the door is shut tightly so Clem can't get in.
Everything would be all right, I assured myself. After all, Miranda had said so. I was all set to get in a good daytime snooze. But as soon as the door to the apartment closed, Clem started whining outside the room. I could hear his big paws up on the door, trying to push it open. I was a little nervous, but Miranda had assured me I'd be all right. After all, she wouldn't be gone long. Then I heard it, the slight turning of the doorknob as Clem flung himself at the door repeatedly. What a barbarian he was! Suddenly, the door swung open, and Clem burst in and ran straight to my cage. I tried to distract him by spinning on my wheel. I can do that for hours, if necessary. I thought the spinning wheel might even hypnotize him, like in an old movie I'd seen with Miss Mack. Miss Mack, where was she when I needed her? But apparently all that spinning just excited Clem more. He started barking at me, but I couldn't understand a word he said.
Now, cut that out!
I squeaked at him. That just seemed to make him more hot and bothered. He plopped his front paws up on the desk and stuck his nose against the cage door near the lock. The lock that doesn't lock.
Easy now, calm down,
I squeaked soothingly at the beast, but he kept poking his nose at the cage, showing me his huge tongue and the huge teeth around it. Let me just say that Clem could stand some breath mints. He poked the lock again and again. I knew if he jiggled it enough, the door would swing open, and I'd be history. Poor Miranda would never know what had happened to me. She might even cry. I couldn't stand the thought of Miranda crying. I hopped back on my wheel and started spinning with all my might, hoping to buy some time. Clem pulled back for a moment and stared at the wheel going round and round. Let me just say I'm glad that Clem is about 2 quarts low in the brain department. Phew, I'm a good spinner, but I was getting worried about how long I could keep it up when Golden Miranda rushed in. She never looked more beautiful to me than at that moment.
Clem, stop it! She shouted in a very firm voice. Bad boy!
Clem raced to her side, wagging his tail. Miranda's mom dragged old Clem out of the room and closed the door behind her.
Whew, whew, whew!
Miranda was very sorry. She opened the cage and reached in to pick me up.
Poor Humphrey, she said, hugging me.
She set me on her desk and stroked me gently with one finger.
I'm so sorry, Humphrey, so sorry.
Oh, I don't know what felt better, the petting or Miranda's soothing words. Miranda felt so terrible about what had happened, she let me play on her desk. She lined up books all along the edges so I wouldn't fall off. Then she let me wander around and see the sights. A desktop is a very interesting place, in case you've never explored one. Miranda's desktop had a big cup with hearts all over it. The cup was filled with pencils. Ah, pencils smell so sweet. She had a round silvery container of paper clips and a square purple container of rubber bands. She had lots of paper in a pink box, and she had a great big fat dictionary. I could really use one of those. I wonder if they make doll-sized dictionaries you can hide behind a hamster mirror. Miranda giggled as she watched me check things out. When I tried to climb into the paperclip box, she stopped me with her finger.
No, no, Humphrey, those would hurt you.
She did the same thing when I tried to roll in the rubber band box. No, Humphrey, Rubber bands can be very dangerous, she told me. Well, I guess I knew that. Hadn't Garth shot a rubber band at AJ last week and almost got sent to Principal Morales' office? Hadn't AJ held his arm and said, ow, when the rubber band hit him? Anyway, I really enjoyed my time on the desk until I heard Clem barking. Then I made a beeline for home.
Oh, Humphrey, I won't let Clem hurt you. Honest.
Miranda assured me she gently helped me back in my cage. I believed her. I really did. But when it was bedtime and Miranda's mom came into the room to say goodnight, she said some words that sent a chill up my spine.
Oh, don't forget, we're going to the Nicholson's house tomorrow night.
Miranda protested.
I hate to leave Humphrey. Clem gives him such a hard time.
We'll lock the door this time, honey. He'll be okay, her mom said. And tonight, Clem will be in my room. After her mother left, Miranda assured me that Clem loves to sleep in Mom's room. But if anything happens and you get scared, just give me a squeak, she told me.
Don't worry, I will,
I assured her. I didn't sleep that night. For one thing, the stars on Miranda's ceiling glow in the dark, and they're so beautiful, I couldn't take my eyes off them. For another thing, well, I am nocturnal. But mainly, I didn't sleep because I was worried about Clem. After my experience that afternoon, I believed that no lock could hold him back. And how could a little hamster fight back? What weapon would I have against a big, hairy, bad-breath, small-brained creature? What weapon indeed? I had an idea. Clem hadn't made a peep for hours, so I took a chance and quietly opened the lock that doesn't lock and dashed across the desktop to pick my weapon, just in case of another encounter with Clem. Then I scampered back to the cage with it and quietly closed the door. I hid my weapon behind my mirror next to the notebook where no one could find it. Then I managed to get 40 winks or so of sleep around sunrise. Miranda and her mom kept Clem out of my sight all day until it was time for them to go to their party.
I'm still worried, said Miranda.
I'm locking your door with a key on the outside, her mom said. I'm locking Clem in my room, and Humphrey's cage is closed tightly, right? Miranda checked it. Everybody always checks it. It always seems locked from the outside. It even makes a clicking sound. But from the inside, believe me, it's a piece of cake to open. Miranda seemed satisfied with the arrangement, but I wasn't. So I remained on high alert all that afternoon and evening. And here's what happened. After Miranda and her mom left, Clem barked for a while. Then I heard jiggling and joggling for about an hour. Next, I heard big hairy feet padding down the hall toward Miranda's room, toward my room. I sucked in my breath and waited. Yes, I knew Miranda's mom had locked the door with a key. But Clem didn't seem to let little things like that stand in his way. The doorknob squeaked and rattled. It twisted and turned. Nothing happened. But that didn't seem to bother Clem, the barbarian. He jiggled, rattled, and twisted it some more. When he got tired of that, he threw his whole body at the door. And then, very slowly, the door opened. Clem actually seemed surprised, but I wasn't. I'd spent the last 2 hours carefully preparing for this moment. But that doesn't mean my heart wasn't going thump, thump, thump very loudly. Even Fanny the Fish seemed nervous. Clem trotted right up to my cage and stuck his big wet nose up against it.
Stay away! Keep your distance!
I squeaked.
I'm warning you!
Clem wasn't discouraged one bit. Woo! He barked, sending a foul cloud of doggy breath my way. I didn't even flinch. He barked a few more times and then began poking his big nose against the cage door. I wondered if he actually knew the lock was broken. The time had arrived to put my plan into action. I was in grave danger and I had no choice. I would only have one chance at Clem because I only had one weapon, a rubber band. It had taken me a long time to get it hooked around the edge of my food dish. Now I carefully pulled it back as far as I could, aiming directly at those big doggy nostrils.
You asked for it, beast!
I squeaked. Then I let loose. The rubber band snapped and sailed through the air, hitting Clem squarely on the nose. He yelped like a baby and raced out of the room as if he'd seen a ghost. Too bad I still didn't have my ghost costume. That would have been a nice touch. I guess Clem wasn't quite as dumb as I thought, because he never even tried to come back in the room again. Of course, Miranda and her mom were really puzzled when they came home and found both bedrooms unlocked and Clem cowering under the living room sofa.
"I don't get it," said Miranda. "Humphrey looks just fine. Maybe it was a burglar."
But Miranda's mom checked the closets and drawers, and nothing was missing.
"Now that is a mystery," said Miranda's mother, after she'd searched the whole apartment.
Miranda stared at me, shaking her head.
"If only Humphrey could talk," she said. "But I can, if he'd just listen," I told her.
"I bet you'd have a lot to tell us," Miranda continued, not understanding my squeaks.
"Yes, I do," I thought. "Enough
to fill a book." Tip 9. Hamsters do not enjoy contact with other animals. A cat or dog may eat a hamster, or at least do it bodily harm. Guide to the Care and Feeding of Hamsters, Dr. Harvey H. Hammer. Chapter 10. Garth versus AJ. If you have dogs or cats, you have to be very careful not to let them get near Humphrey, Miranda warned the rest of the class when we returned to room 26.
"You can say that again,"
I squeaked, but she didn't. I still considered Golden Miranda to be a special friend, and I had a very clean cage to show for my weekend, as well as a new respect for rubber bands. But I also decided that even though Miranda is practically a perfect person, I was not in a hurry to stay with her again. AJ raised his hand, and Mrs. Brisbane called on him.
"May I have Humphrey this weekend? We don't have a dog or a cat," he bellowed.
"Lower your voice, AJ. I'll let you know on Thursday. There may be other students who want Humphrey as well." At least half the hands in the classroom went up as kids started shouting,
"Me, me!"
I was quite flattered. But for some reason, the whole subject seemed to make Garth mad. Within minutes, he shot a rubber band at AJ.
"Ouch!"
AJ complained loudly. When he told the teacher what had happened, Garth denied it.
"Humphrey did it," he said.
Gail giggled. Mrs. Brisbane did not. "I don't believe a hamster can shoot a rubber band," she said sternly. "A lot she knows." The next day, Garth stuck his foot out and tripped Art as he went to sharpen his pencil.
"I didn't do it. He's just clumsy,"
Garth protested when Mrs. Brisbane angrily scolded him. That same day, Garth pushed Gail at morning recess. He spent afternoon recess inside. "Garth Tugwell, you are halfway to Principal Morales' office right now." Mrs. Brisbane sounded really angry. Garth just shrugged his shoulders. On Wednesday, Garth sneaked back into the room while Mrs. Brisbane went to the office during recess, and he headed straight for my cage. The two of us were all alone in the room.
"Hello, rat. Why don't you just run away?
Then nobody will take you home on the weekend," he said. He opened my cage door and grabbed me.
"You'd like your freedom, wouldn't you, rat?"
He set me on the floor. My heart was pounding.
Thump, thump, thump. "Go on, rat. Skedaddle."
He gave me a little push with his hand. I scampered under the table. I wanted to say something, but for the first time ever, I was scared squeakless.
"Have fun,"
he said, and in an instant he was gone. I was pretty confused. For one thing, I didn't want to run away. I was perfectly happy staying in room 26 and having adventures on the weekend. Where would I go? What would I do? There was no time to waste. I scampered over to the cord that hung down from the blinds and grabbed onto it. Then I started the old swinging routine, back and forth, swinging a little higher each time until I reached the tabletop. Back, forth, back, forth, back, forth.
Leap!
There wasn't time to think about my queasy stomach as I raced into my cage, slamming the door shut behind me. Just then, Mrs. Brisbane returned. I darted into my sleeping house so she wouldn't see how hard I was breathing. I saw her look at the window, puzzled. She walked over to it and stared at the blind cord, which was still swinging. She reached out and stopped it with her hand. Then she shook her head and walked away. When recess was over and my classmates filed back into the class, Garth looked over at my cage, half smiling. But that smile quickly disappeared when he saw that the door was closed. He leaped out of his seat and looked in my cage.
"Howdy,"
I squeaked at him. "Garth, please get back in your seat," Mrs. Brisbane told him.
But Humphrey," he protested.
"Well, what is it?" Mrs. Brisbane was getting irritated.
He's in his cage,"
he said. A few of my classmates giggled, but not Mrs. Brisbane. In case you haven't noticed, he's always in his cage, Garth, she said. Now, get back in your seat. Garth did what she said, but for the rest of the day I noticed him staring over at me. On Thursday, Mrs. Brisbane announced that I would be spending the weekend at AJ's house. Yes! Shouted AJ, delighted at the news. A few seconds later, a whole series of rubber bands hit AJ on his neck, shoulder, and head.
Cool it, Garth!
Yelled AJ, jumping out of his chair.
Man, I'm tired of these rubber bands!
Garth acted innocent.
I don't know where they came from. They could have come from anywhere.
Garth did it, Heidi said.
I saw him.
Mrs. Brisbane didn't remind Heidi to raise her hand, but she did tell Garth to stay in during recess.
Not fair, Garth muttered under his breath.
When the bell rang for recess, Garth stayed in his seat. Mrs. Brisbane closed the door when all the other students had left and walked to his desk. Normally, I would have been napping at this time, but I was wide awake and wondering what that boy had to say.
Garth, you've been acting strange lately. You never got into trouble at all until 2 weeks ago.
Now you're shooting rubber bands at people and disturbing the entire class? Can you tell me why? Garth slowly shook his head no.
Your grades are slipping too. Has something changed in your life?
Garth slowly shook his head again.
How about at home? Is anything wrong?
Garth didn't shake his head. He didn't move a muscle.
Should I talk to your parents about your behavior, Garth?
Garth's face got very red.
No,
he said with a choking sound. Mrs. Brisbane moved closer and put her hand on Garth's shoulder.
Tell me what's wrong.
My mom's sick, he said. Real sick.
Tears ran down his cheeks. I was feeling a little teary-eyed myself.
How sick? Mrs. Brisbane asked.
She lost all this weight, and she was in and out of the hospital, and now she's just tired all the time, and...
Garth didn't try to finish his sentence. Garth wiped away the tears with the tissue Mrs. Brisbane handed him.
That's why I can't take Humphrey home. My dad says we can't let anything bother Mom. Well, my little brother bothers her, and we let him in the house.
Mrs. Brisbane smiled slightly. Humphrey is a big responsibility, Garth. That's why I don't take him home. My husband's been sick, too. Did you know that?
Garth shook his head.
No.
So, I know what it's like. Listen, I'll make a few calls tonight. Maybe we can find a way for you to spend some time with Humphrey.
But he hates me,
I squeaked.
I'd like to, said Garth.
Huh? I was confused. But you have to promise me that you won't disrupt the class anymore, Mrs. Brisbane told him. Is that a deal? Garth nodded.
Deal.
As you know, I'm very good at coming up with plans to solve human problems. Very, very good. But try as I might, I couldn't imagine what Mrs. Brisbane's plan to get Garth to spend time with me could be. I was still trying to figure it out when Aldo arrived that night.
Humphrey, my man,
he yelled when he opened the door. I almost fell off my wheel.
You are the most handsome, intelligent hamster in the world, and I am the luckiest man in the world because I am dating the most beautiful woman in the world.
Aldo swept his way toward my cage, then lowered his voice.
But don't tell anybody I said so. Not yet. After all, Marie and I have only been out 3 times.
But oh, what times we've had.
He pulled up a chair and sat very close to me.
And it's all thanks to the Moonlighters Club and that clipping over there.
He pointed toward the spot where the overhead projector had once stood.
And you, I know you had something to do with it. I just can't figure out what.
Anyway, don't tell anybody. But someday, I'm gonna marry Maria. And when I do, I want you to be the best man. Or best hamster, I guess. I really mean it. If you were a guy, I'd buy you a burger.
He reached in his pocket and pulled out a little piece of foil.
Instead, I got you this.
He unwrapped a piece of carrot and put it in my cage.
Thank you, Aldo,
I squeaked.
I wish you lots of happiness.
I knew you'd be happy for me, Humphrey, Aldo smiled and then jumped up.
Woo!
I've got so much energy, I can clean this room in half the time. I could climb a mountain and not even get tired. I could conquer the world.
He leaned forward and grinned through his glorious mustache.
Ain't love grand?
If you say so,
I replied. I'd never seen anyone so happy before. The only thing that could make me that happy would be if Miss Mac came back. She's not coming back. And I'm still stuck with Mrs. Brisbane, and she's stuck with me. Say, what did she mean when she said she doesn't take me home because her husband's sick? Did she mean she would take me home if her husband wasn't sick? I thought about it all night and came up with this answer. No, no, no. She doesn't take me home because she doesn't like me. Maybe I'm lucky after all. Tip 10. Hamsters are incredible acrobats and climbers. They seem to defy the laws of gravity. Guide to the Care and Feeding of Hamsters by Dr. Harvey H. Hammer. Chapter 11. TV or not TV? Wow, Friday was a great adventure because AJ took me on the school bus. It was noisy and smelly and very, very bumpy. And just about everyone on the bus wanted to get a look at me, including the driver, Miss Victoria. It was exciting, almost too exciting, because AJ couldn't hold my cage steady, and I was slipping and sliding and bouncing until I was quite dizzy.
Sorry, Humphrey, I'm trying to hold still,
AJ told me, as someone bumped his elbow and sent me sprawling on the floor of my cage.
It's all right, I squeaked weakly.
The bus let us off close to AJ's house. It was a two-story old house with a big porch. As soon as I entered, I got a warm welcome from AJ's mom, his younger brother Ty, his little sister Deely, and his baby brother Bo.
Anthony James, introduce us to your little friend, his mom said, greeting us.
Anthony James? Everybody at school called AJ by his initials, or just H.
This is Humphrey, he answered.
Hello, Humphrey, said Mrs. Thomas. So how was your day, Anthony?
Lousy. Garth kept shooting rubber bands at me. He won't leave me alone.
But you two used to be friends, his mother said.
Used to be, said AJ, until he turned into a jerk.
Mom patted her son on the shoulder. Well, you've got the whole weekend to get over it. Now take Humphrey into the den and get him settled. Mrs. Brisbane called him Lower Your Voice AJ, because AJ always talked extra loud in class. I soon noticed that everybody at AJ's house talked extra loud. They had to, because in the background, the TV was always blaring. Now, every house I've been in so far has had a TV. Even Miss Mac had a TV, and I enjoyed some of the shows I'd seen with her. There's one channel that has nothing but the most frightening shows about wild animals attacking one another. I mean wild, like tigers and bears and hippopotamuses. Man, I hope that's not on our vocabulary test in the near future. Those shows make me appreciate the protection of a nice cage, as long as a lock doesn't quite lock. There's another channel that only has people in funny-looking clothes, dancing and singing, in very strange places. It makes me glad that I have a fur coat and don't have to figure out what to wear every day. Mostly, I like the cartoon shows. Sometimes they have mice and rabbits and other interesting rodents, although I've never seen a hamster show. Yet. Anyway, the difference at the Thomas's house is that the television is on all the time. There's a TV on a table across from a big comfy couch and a big comfy chair, and someone's almost always sitting there watching. I know because they put my cage down on the floor next to the couch. I had a very good view of the TV. I couldn't always hear the TV, though, because AJ's mother had a radio in the kitchen, which was blaring most of the time while she cooked or did crossword puzzles or talked on the phone. No matter what she did, the radio was always on. When AJ's dad came home from work, he plopped down on the couch and watched TV while he played with the baby. Then AJ and Ty plugged in some video games and played while Dad watched. Deely listened to the radio with her mom and danced around the kitchen. When it was time for dinner, the whole family took plates and sat in the den so they could watch TV while they ate. Then they watched TV some more. They made popcorn and kept watching. Finally, the kids went to bed, the baby first, then Deely, and later Ty and AJ. After they were all in their rooms, Mr. and Mrs. Thomas kept watching TV and ate some ice cream. Later, Mrs. Thomas yawned loudly. Well, I've had it, Charlie. I'm going to bed, and I suggest you do too, she said. But Mr. Thomas just kept on watching, or at least he kept on sitting there until he fell asleep on the couch. I ended up watching the rest of the wrestling match without him. Unfortunately, the wrestler I was rooting for, Thor of Glore, lost. Finally, Mr. Thomas woke up, yawned, flicked off the TV, and went upstairs to bed. Peace at last. But the quiet only lasted about 10 minutes. Soon, Mom brought Bo downstairs and gave him a bottle while she watched TV. When Bo finally fell asleep, Mrs. Thomas yawned and flicked off the TV. Blessed relief. 5 minutes later, Mr. Thomas returned. Sorry, hamster, can't sleep, he mumbled to me as he flicked on the remote. He watched and then dozed off again. But the TV stayed on, leaving me no choice but to watch a string of commercials for car waxes, weight-reducing programs, exercise machines, and red-hot harmonica classics. The combination of being nocturnal and being bombarded with sight and sound kept me wide awake. At the crack of dawn, Deely tiptoed into the room, dragging her doll by its hair, and switched to a cartoon show about princesses. She watched another show about cats and dogs. Scary. Then Mr. Thomas woke up and wanted to check some sports scores. Mrs. Thomas handed him the baby and his bottle, and soon the older boys switched over to video games and their parents watched them play. It was loud, loud, loud. But the Thomases didn't seem to notice. What do you want for breakfast? Mom shouted.
What?
Dad shouted louder.
What do you want for breakfast?
Mom yelled.
Toaster waffles!
Dad yelled louder.
I can't hear the TV!
Ty hollered, turning up the volume.
Do you want juice?
Mom screamed.
Can't hear you!
Dad responded. And so it went. With each new question, the sound on the TV would be turned up higher and higher until it was positively deafening. Then Mom switched on her radio. The Thomases were a perfectly nice family, but I could tell it was going to be a very long and noisy weekend unless I came up with a plan. So I spun on my wheel for a while to help me think, and I thought and thought and thought some more. And then it came, the big idea. I probably would have come up with it sooner if I could have heard myself think. Around noon, the Thomases were all watching the football game on TV. Or rather, Mr. Thomas was watching the football game on TV, while AJ and Ty shouted questions at him. Mrs. Thomas was in the kitchen, listening to the radio and talking on the phone. Deely played peekaboo with the baby in the cozy chair. No one was watching me, so I carefully opened the lock that doesn't lock on my cage and made a quick exit. Naturally, no one could hear me skittering across the floor as I made my way around the outside of the room, over to the space behind the TV cabinet. Then, with great effort, I managed to pull out the plug, one of the most difficult feats of my life. The TV went silent. Beautifully, blissfully, silently, silent. So silent, I was afraid to move. I waited behind the cabinet, frozen. The Thomases stared at the TV screen as the picture slowly went dark.
Ty, did you hit that remote?
Mr. Thomas asked.
Nah, it's under the table.
Anthony, go turn that thing on again, Mr. Thomas said. AJ jumped up and hit the power button on the TV. Nothing happened.
It's broken,
he exclaimed. Mrs. Thomas rushed in from the kitchen.
Well, what happened?
Mr. Thomas explained that the TV had gone off, and they discussed how old it was, 5 years, whether it had a guarantee, no one knew, and if Mr. Thomas could fix it, he couldn't.
Everything was fine, and it went off, just like that.
I guess we'd better take it in to get fixed, Mr. Thomas said.
How long will it take? Deely asked in a whiny voice.
I don't know, her dad replied.
How much will it cost? Mrs. Thomas asked.
Oh, yeah, her husband said. I forgot. We're a little low on funds right now.
The baby began to cry. I thought the rest of the family might start crying, too.
Well, I get paid next Friday, Dad said. AJ jumped up and waved his hands.
That's a whole week away.
I'm going to Grandma's house. Her TV works, said Ty.
Me too, Deely chimed in.
Grandma's got her bridge club over there tonight, Mom said.
I know, said Dad. Let's go to a movie.
Do you know how much it costs to go to a movie? Mom asked.
Besides, we can't take the baby.
Oh. They whined and bickered for quite a while. They got so loud I managed to scamper back to my cage, unnoticed. Then I guess I dozed off. Remember, I had hardly had a wink of sleep since I had arrived. The bickering was a nice, soothing background after all that racket. I was only half asleep when the squabbling changed.
But there's nothing to do,
Deely whined. Her father chuckled.
Nothing to do?
girl, my brothers and I used to spend weekends at my grandma's house, and she never had a TV. Wouldn't allow it.
What did you do?
AJ asked. Oh, we were busy every minute, he recalled. We played cards and board games and word games, and we dug in her garden and played tag. He chuckled again. A lot of times we just sat on the porch and talked. My grandma, whew, she could talk.
What'd you talk about? Ty wondered.
Oh, she'd tell us stories about her growing up, about ghosts and funny things, like the time her uncle was walking in his sleep and went to church in his pajamas.
Mrs. Thomas gasped.
Oh, go on now, Charlie. I'm just telling you what she told us. He woke up in the middle of the service, looked down, and there he was, in his blue and white striped pajamas.
I let out a squeak of surprise, and the kids all giggled.
Then Mrs. Thomas told a story about a girl in her class who came to school in her slippers by accident one day.
Yes, the fuzzy kind, she explained with a big smile.
They talked and talked, and Dad got out some cards, and they played a game called Crazy Eights, and another one called Pig, where they put their fingers on their noses and laugh like hyenas. When Beau fussed, they took turns jiggling him on their knee. After a while, Mrs. Thomas gasped,
Goodness sakes, it's an hour past your bedtimes.
The children all groaned and asked if they could play cards tomorrow, and in a few minutes, all the Thomases had gone to bed, and it was quiet, 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 for the first time since I'd arrived. Tip 11. Be careful. If set free, hamsters are experts at disappearing in a room. Guide to the Care and Feeding of Hamsters, Dr. Harvey H. Hammer. Chapter 12. Peace breaks out. Early in the morning, Ty, Dealey, and AJ raced downstairs and played Crazy Eights. Later, they ran outside and threw a football around the yard. The Thomases were having breakfast with Beau when the phone rang. Mr. Thomas talked for a few minutes, mostly saying, Uh-huh, that's fine. When he hung up, he told Mrs. Thomas, We're going to have a visitor, but don't tell Anthony James.
Ooh, a mystery.
I like mysteries because they're fun to solve. Then again, I don't like mysteries because I don't like not knowing what's going on. So I waited and waited. A few hours later, the doorbell rang. The visitor turned out to be Garth Tugwell and his father.
I really appreciate this, Mr. Tugwell told the Thomases. It was Mrs. Brisbane's idea. Since Garth can't have Humphrey at our house right now, she suggested that he could help AJ take care of him over here.
Sounds like Mrs. Brisbane, as if I'm trouble to take care of. But Garth had been crying because he couldn't have me. So maybe, she was just trying to be nice. After Mr. Tugwell left, Mr. Thomas called AJ in. AJ ran into the room and practically backed out again when he saw Garth.
We have a guest, said Mr. Thomas. Shake hands, Anthony. Garth is here to help you take care of Humphrey.
AJ and Garth reluctantly shook hands.
How come? Asked AJ.
Garth shrugged his shoulders.
Mrs. Brisbane said to,
Well, come on, we'll clean his cage and get it over with, AJ said. The boys didn't talk much while they cleaned the cage, but they started giggling when they cleaned up my potty corner. I don't know why that makes everybody giggle. After they stopped giggling, they started talking and kidding around. They decided to let me out of the cage, so they took a set of old blocks from Dealey's room and built me a huge maze. Oh, I love mazes. When we were all tired of that game, AJ offered to teach Garth to play Crazy Eights, and then Ty and Dealey joined them in a game of Go Fish. Nobody mentioned the TV. Nobody shot any rubber bands. Later in the afternoon, the kids were all outside playing football. I was fast asleep until Mrs. Thomas came into the den with a broom and started sweeping. A minute later, Mr. Thomas entered.
What are you doing, hon?
What does it look like? I'm sweeping. You know, all the snacking we do in here makes a real mess on the floor, she said.
Beau's asleep? Her husband asked.
Uh-huh. Mr. Thomas walked over to his wife and took the broom away from her.
Then you sit down and rest the spell, hon. All sweet. Go on, don't argue.
Mrs. Thomas smiled and thanked him and sat down on the couch. Mr. Thomas swept all around the outside of the room, even behind the TV.
Uh-oh.
When he got there, he stopped sweeping and leaned down.
We'll all be, he muttered.
What's wrong? Asked Mrs. Thomas.
The TV is unplugged, he said. It's unplugged.
He came out from behind the TV, plug in hand, and a very puzzled look on his face.
But it couldn't have just come unplugged while we were sitting in there watching. I mean,
A plug doesn't just fall out, he said.
Plug it in, see if it works, his wife told him. Well, you guessed it. The TV came on as bright and loud as ever.
I don't get it, Mr. Thomas muttered, but at least we don't have to pay to get it fixed.
Mrs. Thomas stared at the screen for a few seconds, then glanced out the window at the kids playing happily outside.
Charlie, what do you say we keep it unplugged for a couple more days? She asked. We just won't tell the kids.
Mr. Thomas grinned. Then he bent down and unplugged the TV. Couldn't hurt, he said. He put down the broom and sat on the couch near his wife, and the two of them just sat there in the den, giggling like, well, like Stop Giggling Gale. Suddenly, Mr. Thomas looked over at me.
You don't mind a little peace and quiet, do you, Humphrey?
No, 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 I squeaked,
and I promptly fell asleep. Things were a lot better when A.J. Garth and I returned to room 26. No rubber bands flew through the air. Garth didn't trip anybody or make fun of anybody. That meant Gail didn't get in trouble for giggling. Heidi didn't get in trouble for speaking out without raising her hand because she wasn't trying to tell Mrs. Brisbane what Garth had done. But the best change was Saya, who did raise her hand every single day. One day, she raised her hand to volunteer to stand during recess to clean the chalkboard. Miranda raised her hand, too. Mrs. Brisbane chose them both. Girls, I think I can trust you to stay here while I run this report down to the principal's office, Mrs. Brisbane told them. Of course she could trust them. Once the girls were alone, they began to talk.
I really liked your singing, Miranda told Saya. Thanks.
My mom and I are going to a musical version of Cinderella over at the college this weekend, Miranda continued. We have an extra ticket. Would you like to come with us? My mom will pick you up. Saya quickly turned to face Miranda.
Oh, yes. I have not been to a play before.
Miranda grinned.
Good. I'll have my mom call your mom.
Suddenly, Saya's face fell.
Oh, better not. She's so busy. Give me your number, and I'll have my father call your mother.
Saya watched Miranda's reaction carefully. So did I.
Cool.
That was it. Miranda jotted down her number. Saya looked greatly relieved. I knew that Miranda's mother didn't care how well Saya's mother spoke English. Maybe now Saya would figure that out, too. Another great thing that happened was that Mrs. Brisbane started reading a book out loud to the class. Sometimes I doze right through these sessions, but this time she picked out a really good book. When she announced that it was about a mouse, Gail giggled.
What did she say? Art whispered to Richie.
Pay attention, Art, Mrs. Brisbane said. It's about a mouse.
Several of the boys groaned.
Baby stuff, one of them muttered.
We'll see,
Mrs. Brisbane told them. She started to read, and
oh, what a tale it was,
all about mice no bigger than I am, who were great warriors. I was longing to put on some armor myself by the time she stopped reading.
Continue tomorrow, she announced as she stuck a bookmark in place and closed the book.
Tomorrow? That woman truly has a mean streak. She proved it again and again. I would have sneaked out of my cage at night to finish the book, but she's so mean, she stuck it in her desk drawer, the one she locks with a key.
Grrr.
The weekend came around quickly, though, and I went home with Richie. I'm still not quite sure how many people actually live at the Rinaldi's house, because there were always so many people coming and going. Aunts, uncles, cousins, grandparents, neighbors. One meal seemed to flow right into the next, and Richie's mom was very generous with treats. I'll tell you one thing, you could never be lonely or hungry at the Rinaldi's house. On Sunday afternoon, guess who showed up? Remember Richie's uncle? That's right, Aldo Amato. This time, my buddy Aldo was not lonely because he brought along his girlfriend Maria to meet the family. She was a very nice lady who wore her long hair piled up high on her head. She was dressed in bright red from head to toe, red earrings, red sweater, red skirt, and red shoes. I think red is a very happy color. I think Maria is a very happy person, especially when she's with Aldo. All the Rinaldis made a big fuss over Maria and praised the bread and cookies she'd brought from the bakery where she worked. After all the commotion of their arrival died down, I heard Aldo tell Maria,
"Now, there's someone really important I want you to meet."
And he introduced her to
me, me, me.
"Believe it or not, Humphrey is one of my best friends," he told her, "and he was the very first friend I told about you."
"Then I am honored to meet you, Humphrey," Maria said, smiling down at me.
"The pleasure is all mine,"
I squeaked.
See, he likes you, said Aldo.
And indeed, I did.
The world seemed like a pretty nice place for a handsome young hamster like me, I can tell you. I was sitting on top of the world when I returned to room 26 on Monday, but I just about toppled off when Mrs. Brisbane made an alarming announcement.
Class, as you know, this will be a short week due to Thanksgiving, and that means Humphrey will need a home for 4 days instead of two. Now, who wants to volunteer?
You won't believe what I'm about to say. Not one hand went up. I actually fell off my wheel.
Mrs. Brisbane was surprised, too.
No one?
She asked.
Heidi, didn't you want to take Humphrey home? Oh, yes, but we're going to my grandma's house for Thanksgiving, she explained.
Art, didn't you ask for Humphrey last week?
Yes, but we're having all my relatives for Thanksgiving, and Mom says it wouldn't be a good time,
Art explained. And so it went. Every single classmate had big plans for Thanksgiving. Plans that didn't include having an extra hamster around.
I was worried, worried, worried.
I didn't want to spend 4 days alone in room 26. I worried all day Monday. I worried all day Tuesday. I worried even more all day Wednesday. At the end of the day, Principal Morales stopped by to give Mrs. Brisbane an envelope. I think it was her paycheck because she was especially glad to see him.
I have a huge favor to ask, she said.
Sure, Sue. What is it? Asked Principal Morales. He wore a tie with little turkeys all over it.
Could you possibly take Humphrey for the weekend?
I had my paws crossed that he'd say yes, but Principal Morales didn't even smile.
Oh, Sue, I'd love to, but we're going out of town for the holiday. Another time, I'd love to.
Another time wouldn't matter. I needed a place to go now. After the principal left, Mrs. Brisbane sighed and began gathering up her papers. Then she turned to me.
Well, Humphrey, it looks like you're going home with me for Thanksgiving, she said grimly. My fate was sealed. I was going to the home of the woman who had once vowed to get rid of me for 4 whole days. And frankly, I was worried I'd never come back.
Tip 12. If you must leave your hamster with a caretaker, make sure that it is someone you know and trust. Guide to the Care and Feeding of Hamsters, Dr. Harvey H. Hammer.
Thank you to local teachers for taking the time to send us recordings for this special program. You're listening to KRBD Ketchikan.